Welcome back to Life North of the 54th. I'm Garrett Brown.
I'm Preston Brown, and we're grateful to have on our show with us the Shipleys, so we'll have them introduce themselves.
I'm Rhianne Shipley.
And I'm Kim Shipley.
Thank you so much for joining us today on our show.
It's a delight.
Thank you. So do you want to tell us about what brought you to the Peace Country and what brought you away from it, and how you met and sort of where you grew up?
Sure. I grew up in southern Alberta, and Rhianne was raised here in Edmonton. The turning point of so many things in my life, of course, was my mission. And I'd gone to the U of A here for 2 years before my mission. And I always thought that I would live in a big city. And when I went to Hong Kong after 2.5 years in Hong Kong, it was during the Cultural Revolution, and we were always, you know, lined up, queued up, in a line waiting for something or other, and because half of the buses were on strike, etc. And so after that experience, I decided I did not want to live in a big city. When I was finishing law school, I thought I didn't want to grow up in southern Alberta because I didn't want to be. I was raised in a Mormon community, and I wanted to live where we were a minority. And so southern Alberta was out of the question. I thought the best compromise was Red Deer. So we waited for months and months to get an interview for articles in Red Deer. And when we finally got articles, by that time, nearly everybody in the law class had got their articles lined up. And so we took this interview in Red Deer, and guess what? We didn't get the job. So now Rand's panicking. She thinks we're going to be unemployed. And I was walking through the law school, and I saw an advertisement for Grand Prairie. I didn't know much about Grand Prairie, but something seemed right about it. So we made arrangements to go up there for an interview, and we were able to get our articles in Grand Prairie with the Patterson Lewis firm. And so one of the other reasons I wanted to get in a rural area, an area that had rural property, so that because I wanted to be a gentleman farmer on the weekend. I kind of grew up in that environment. And like I said, after Hong Kong, I wanted to just be out alone with the cows. So when we went up to Grand Prairie, we took the position, and wasn't too much longer after that, but we found an acreage out where you folks were living on the banks of the Wapiti River, and we just loved it. I loved it more than Rand did, but that's another story. We came up, and the church was small. And over the years, I came to recognize that the thing I liked most about the Peace Country and Grand Prairie was the church. We had a lot of young couples. It was a small branch that was just turning into a ward, but we had a lot of couples there that were our age, just starting their families. Grand Prairie itself in those days was a very young city, and there weren't a lot of old people because people tended to start their careers off in a place like Grand Prairie and then would move out and move on. So we just had a real lot of young couples that were there, young families, and we just really liked it. I liked the youngness of the place. Another thing we liked about being in Grand Prairie was that, you know, we hear stories all the time about people who would go back to live in Raymond or move to McGrath or southern Alberta. And if they didn't have family there, they were just kind of hung out to dry. Whereas in Grand Prairie, nobody had family there.
Yeah.
And so everybody associated with everybody else. And everybody was very open and friendly, and It was just a great place to live and to raise our family.
You know, when we went up there for that interview, it was wintertime, and I would have been about 7.5 months pregnant with our second child, Todd. So we had a young daughter, and I was pregnant when we went up there in our little vehicle, and it was cold. It had to have been March sometime, and the heater didn't work on our vehicle. I don't think I've ever been as cold and as chilled in any other time in my life as that trip up there. When we got to the motel, the first thing I did was go and run a hot bath and just sit in the bathtub. We were so cold. So, you know, that wasn't a very good beginning to being introduced to Grand Prairie. And like Kim says, I was born and raised in Edmonton. So there was a lot of talking that was going on to convince me that I even wanted to be in something that was smaller than Edmonton. But I married him, and I knew his feelings about going back to Southern Alberta. And he had applied for working for the government, but they had, and it looked very promising in Ottawa. And then they had all of a sudden a freeze, and we never did hear back from them until he'd accepted the position in Grand Prairie. And by then we were up there and he was working. And, you know, when we went to church that first Sunday, of course, the church has grown since we got there. They were just finishing the chapel onto the first edition of that building.
First phase.
And first phase. And when we got there, their first Sunday we went, there was no one at church. There was just a sign on the door of the church that said district conference. And they were in Dawson, a district conference. That was our introduction to the church. And when we got there the next Sunday, people were so happy to see us because they had qualified to build that chapel. And then just about the mainstay of that branch moved. So it didn't leave even, they didn't fill up the Sunday school room, the primary room. And here was this big, huge chapel. And so as we moved in, there were several couples that moved in just about the same time. And we kept being told, you're an answer to prayer. You're an answer to prayer. Because they just didn't qualify for that big, huge chapel that was there. And of course, everyone was thrilled that they were building it. And we were saying to Preston, we got up there. And here I was with this new baby and this toddler. And I would, at 10 o'clock at night, I would nurse Todd and lay him down, and at 2, he'd be awake, ready to nurse again. And I would put him down, and it was light, and I would pick him up at 2, and it was light. We finally figured out why everyone had tin foil on their windows, and it was everywhere in Grand Prairie. Everybody had tin foil on their windows, and to be very honest, we had tin foil on our windows until we could afford to have blinds that could darken out the bedrooms and curtains so that our kids could sleep, get to bed at a half decent time of night. And when we moved up there, they had found us a part of a duplex to live in up in the hillside area, and it was new. And we'd had to buy a refrigerator and a stove to move there, but it was far more money than what we could afford on what they were paying us. And at that time, Vista Village was just brand new. They had the first phase of it done, and they had just finished the second phase, and it had no sidewalks. It had a parking lot, and the parking lot had been paved, but there wasn't a sidewalk anywhere and no grass. So it was just dirt and pieces of wood laid down. So I think they had the 100s and the 200s done, and the 300s and the 400s in that development were that. And we moved in, so we moved out of the duplex and into Vista Village. And we had been in Vista Village a month and a half, and it snowed in August, from August the 16th to the 18th, 1973, a foot of snow. And it was just an absolute quagmire to get in to our place. I haven't forgotten that. And it took quite a while before we had sidewalks going in there. But that was a real blessing because that was subsidized housing then. And it made it so that we could almost pay our bills. So when Kim started as the young guy, nobody wanted to drive out and do the work for the prosecution. So that meant that Kim would drive to Spirit River and to Valley View, lots of times to Valley View. I think it was just the two places, maybe Fairview too, and Fairview. And he was paid mileage on our little Datsun 510. And between his $300 a month, that's what we were paid, and the mileage, we were able to live for the first 2 years we were there. That was the only way that we could do it. And took out part of my pension from teaching school, because it was just too, we were just too close to the line with two little children. So that first few years we were there, I sewed his suits, and he put rubber soles on the bottom of his shoes because he had holes in the bottoms of his shoes. So things were pretty lean and mean when we graduated from university with two kids and this little tiny income up there. And he's really right about, you know, the ward in Vista Village. The Hatch family lived there, and you wouldn't remember them, but one of the state presidents here in Edmonton is Kevin Hatch, and he was their baby when we were there, and they lived at the other end of Vista Village. So the Hatches were there, the Woolies were there, Ron and Betty. Betty just passed away last month.
She did.
Yeah, and so they were there. Who else was there?
Patrick.
Oh, yeah, Patrick's, Ron and Arja Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
Who else?
Garth Rowe.
Yeah, Garth and Shirley Rowe. So Patrick's are back in Edmonton here.
Probably Monty Wild.
And the Rowe's live down in on the Shuswap, enjoying the good life down there. And so there was quite a group of us.
Finney's.
Yeah, and the Finney family, Jerry and Frank Finney. So there were a lot of us that were there and stayed there for quite a while, actually. Then as the ward started to grow and got bigger, some of those people that were there with us at the very beginning moved on. Because Grand Prairie at that point, the church hadn't been growing for years. And the reason for it was people were transferred there and then they got a promotion and they would leave. And we kept hoping that someone would move in that was coming to establish a business or buy a business or something professional, so they would stay there and families would stay there. So it wasn't long after we got there that Brent and Barbara Peepgrass moved up there. And of course, Dr. Peepgrass is still there and stayed. And we stayed there until we retired. Kim was 60 and he retired. And that's when we left and came down to Barrhead. But it was, I think, one of the highlights of the year was twice a year when we would have district conference and everybody would come from all over and we would meet. Most of the time it got so it was at the Grand Prairie building because it was the biggest and they just couldn't find a building big enough in the district to rent for them to have meetings. And so that's why it ended up being down in Grand Prairie for many, many years until Fort St. John got a bigger place, their own building. But Kim would travel because he got put into the district council. And so I would travel with him and we traveled up to Manning because there was no branch in Peace River. It had been closed down. And so it was Dixonville, it was called. And they met in a 60-year-old Catholic church. It was very, very small. And they had an old pipe organ. And Elsie, her name is Heiligers now. Elsie, do you remember her family's name? Her dad was a farmer up there. She played the organ. She was about 12 years old. He barely touched that little pedal pump organ. And the Husikas families were there. And the twos, that was about it. And then the Butlers, yeah. And then they reopened Peace River up there. And so someone you might want to talk to that's around Edmonton are the Rices, because the Rices were there just about the same time we got there, or just shortly after they arrived in Peace River, Bill and Karen Rice. And he was an accountant up there.
One of the highlights, as Rand said, was our district conferences. And people would come from all over the Peace Country, BC and Alberta. And we have everyone was billeted in members' homes, and we'd start off with meetings and some recreation. But we usually start off Saturday, and we went all day long with meetings. And in the evening, we'd have a dance or a program or something. And then the next day, we'd have the two conference sessions. So there was a lot of excitement in our district conferences. The mission president was in charge of us, and usually they were there. And we used to have the greatest sessions of conference, and everybody was busy all day long, and then we had catered meals. And I come to the big city now. Of course, the big city, they think that they're smarter than everybody else. But, you know, their state conferences are a dud compared to what we used to have. You know, we had one mission president. His wife was, what was her name? She was a general primary president for the church.
And I can Youngs.
Youngs, yeah. Dwan Young. Anyway, I can still remember this one Saturday night session of conference when they first got there. She said to me, we were sitting on the stand, and she said, there's a tremendous amount of excitement in this room, and you could just feel it. And it was, people would come down as much to go shopping as they came to go to the church, but we all billeted, and we all got to know other people in the district, whether it was in Fort St. John or, you know, Dawson Creek or Chetwin or whatever. And those were exciting times, and we had marvelous conferences, just absolutely marvelous conferences. And I just feel that down here, you know, when you go to a state conference, and it's just a, in my judgment, it's just a pale imitation of what we used to have up there in the Peace Country.
I feel like those must have continued to the time that we were there, and, you know, it was a stake then. But I remember as a youth, those state conferences, the Saturdays would just be full of life and excitement. Like, we would have, like, occasions Ron Patrick would come back up from Edmonton to, like, run things with CES stuff and do things. And we would, like, just the excitement of people coming down from Fort St. John, Dawson Creek, Fairview, like you were saying, and coming from Peace River, that was a lot of fun. And then the evening, like, there would be a break from all the fun, sort of, like, half fun, half educational sort of games. And then in the evening, it would be a dance, and it would be a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. When we got there, there was the church building in Grand Prairie, and there was a phase one building in Dawson Creek. Those were the only church, actual real church buildings that existed. Fort St. John was still meeting in a school when we were there. But there was the branch for the Alberta side. It was Dixonville and Grand Prairie. And I think that was it for the Alberta side. And then there was Dawson Creek and Chetwin and Hudson Hope and Tumbler Bridge and Fort St. John. Hudson Hope had a little church building that we went to. And of course, when the Bennett Dam expanded and got bigger, then a lot of the families that were going to the Hudson Hope branch, their land went underwater. And so they went to Fort St. John. So that'd be the Peterson family, a big family moving into Fort St. John. And,
yeah.
And Hudson Hope branch was shut down.
It's just one thing, though, that was you would find interesting, I think, you and Preston, that there had been a whole influx of Americans coming up to farm mm-hmm. in the Peace Country in British Columbia. And, you know, the Petersons had land out there by the Bennett Dam, Hudson Hope. You know, we had some of the strongest members we had in Fort St. John were, you know, transplanted Americans, and your grandparents came up there. I don't know if they came at the same time, but they were a whole contingent of...
two Zollinger three Zollinger families.
Yeah, a whole contingent of American saints that came there, a long list of them. And they were the core strength of the church in Fort St. John, and they really added a tremendous amount to our district.
Yeah, it was both our grandparents. Our grandparents on both sides that really came up to the Peace Country for farming.
What was it on the other side? Not the brown side. What was the other side?
Missouri.
Missouri.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were on the Alberta side, right?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, by the Cleardale area.
But, you know, when I think of the Peace Country, most of it is because of the church experience. You know, being on a district council, you travel, you know, 3 hours and 3.5 hours, and sometimes 5 hours to be on the council and visit these places. And you got to know the whole Peace Country. We used to have meetings when I was the district president. We used to have meetings as far as Rainbow Lake. You know, we drive all the way up to High Level and another hour or two over to Rainbow Lake. And those are some of the distances we traveled. And you know, we came to have branches in
Northwest Territories.
Anyway, we had branches there in High Prairie and Valley View. We got a building in Valley View and got a building in Fairview and Beaver Lodge. You know, the church really grew with these buildings, but it was mainly because of church service that I think we came to really appreciate how big the Peace Country was and to really have a love for it. Rand was our district Relief Society president at least once. And we just, you know, you got to know mainly the people, but you got to know the towns and the territory and really learn to know and love the Peace Country as a result.
But, you know, when we first arrived there, there were people in the ward that were old then that were the original members of Grand Prairie. So there was Brother and Sister Horton. And he was, I think, their first baptism up there. And they ended up moving down to Grand Prairie. But we had it was a district conference, and we had a 70 who visited. Do you remember that? Anyway, it was the man who, it was the missionary who had baptized the Horton's family.
Wow.
And
that's
that was
cool.
Pretty exciting for them. He went to visit them. And, you know, they were in their 80s, and I was their Sister Horton's visiting teacher. And I can remember her coming to the ward, and I was probably maybe 27, 28 years old. I wasn't that old yet. And she came and taught us how to make bread. And I've never forgotten her teaching us the proper way to knead bread. And taught us that. And so here were all these young Marys there learning how to make bread. And I think we all still make bread because of Sister Horton. And then there were two sisters who came up to the Peace Country as teachers. And they didn't marry members of the church, and their husbands never did join the church. But that was Sister Mackie and Sister Brown. And they were in the ward. And they, you know, they were still coming to church when we arrived there, and for many years after, we're both coming to the ward by themselves without their husbands. They would come to church just as faithful as can be. So there was a few very faithful members there, but we remember them when we arrived there and this big contingent had left. The fear was that, you know, Grand Prairie was going to lose its branch status because it became very close to that. In the early years there, there were only about 8 members of the church in Grand Prairie. And one of the brothers, I think it was Brother Pearson was his name at the time, and he was the Relief Society president.
This is before we arrived.
So, you know, Grand Prairie had some real stalwarts that were with very, very few members who were quite faithful there, just keeping the church there, period, before we got there. So when we were arriving there, replacing the large number that had left, I think that was an answer to prayers, just like many of the places we've been, you know, on missions. There's answers to prayers when you need members for something to grow. And we saw that, but we saw Grand Prairie grow too. When we arrived in 1973, Bechtel was just finishing the pulp mill. And they brought in with them about 5,000 workers. And so the infrastructure in that town had to change because of that, and some of them stayed there. So when we arrived, Grand Prairie had swelled to 21,000 people. So a lot of people in a very short amount of time, because when the mill opened then, of course, it started to employ a lot of people. And then there were some other big projects that went in after. So when we left Grand Prairie, we were at about 44,000 people, and now it's way over 80. So it's grown considerably.
Yes, it definitely has.
Yeah.
One thing again, somewhat negative towards the church here compared to what we had there. When we would travel as a district presidency, like I say, some of those were, you know, 3, 4, and 5 hour drives. You know, we always traveled together as a district presidency in the car, and we usually took, you know, the executive secretary with us. We would just visit and talk about just about anything. We used to have, part of the time we'd have a meeting, but the rest we just talk about the interesting things. Keith Shaw was my counselor. You know, everywhere we went, the highlight, I think, was the trip.
Yeah.
You know, we'd get there and we'd have a good visit, you know, with the branch, but just loved traveling together and visiting and sharing, you know, our knowledge of things. And I see the stakes here in Edmonton, you know, usually if they go out, you know, they're concerned about being efficient, I guess, but they'll have one counselor will go visit the ward all by himself.
Yeah.
The stake president will go to another ward and visit by himself. And they miss that camaraderie, you know, this unifying influence of traveling together that we used to do all the time. And I really think that was one of the real high points of serving up there in that capacity. I don't know how much time you want to give us, but I wanted to share one story that I think about quite a bit, and I get a chuckle out of it every time I think of it. We decided that we were going to be more efficient on our branch conferences, and we would try and visit 2 branches on a Sunday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The first time we tried it, we were going to go to Chetwynd, and then we're going to have our 3-hour conference there. And this is back in the days when we go to church for 3 hours. Yep. And we would go down to Tumbler Ridge and meet with them. Well, we had to leave, you know, about 6 o'clock in the morning or something to get up to Chetwynd in time. So we had the 3-hour break, and we were pretty tired when we were done. Then we drove down to Tumbler Ridge, and it was early because they met in the afternoon. And so we just kind of all leaned back in the car and went to sleep. And all of a sudden, I can remember waking up. I was totally, you might have had this experience sometime in your life. You wake up and you're totally disoriented. Like, yeah. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know if I was alive or dead. And who are these guys in the car? And we all kind of woke up at the same time and we're all disorientated. We didn't know where are we? You know, it's like we went to another realm, you know. And we had this existential experience, you know. So it took a while before we finally remembered, oh, yeah, we're probably here in Tumbler Ridge and we're supposed to meet with these members. So we had a long, you know, we still spent our 3 hours with them. And by the time we were done and drove home, we were absolutely exhausted. And so after that, we decided, no, 1 branch a Sunday, that's enough for us.
You know, when we arrived there, of course, one of the things you have to do is shop.
Yeah.
And we had Woolworths on Main Street. We had Woolworths, and we had a very small Hudson's Bay. And then we had a small Safeways and a small IGA. And I think there might have been a Kresge's there as well, and a small co-op. And it was a big thing to be able to travel down to Edmonton to go shopping, because there really wasn't a lot of choice. There wasn't enough stores for the number of people that had come to live there. So if you didn't shop the first few days, that there were, you know, gumboots for kids or jeans or whatever, you didn't get them. So I did a lot of my shopping via the Sears catalog the first few years that we were there, because it was the only way I knew I could get the things that I needed, you know, as our kids got a little bit older. And then this, and then the mall was built. And that was major to have, you know, Zellers was a big store.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, you know, things started to get a little bit bigger, and that made quite a bit difference. So when we have conference, Fort St. John was coming down to shop in Grand Prairie, which I'm sure they wouldn't have been doing until that started to change and to grow. And our kids, when they first started school, we were in Swan Avon, our first home where our kids were going to school. First, I guess, first Parkside, and then it was Swan Avon. And they'd walk to school. In those days, you could walk to school and your mother didn't have to hold your hand and walk you all the way to school. Make sure you were in the door safely. So my kids walked to school, and then we moved out to where we lived for a good part of our marriage, out on our acreage. And then it was the school bus all of the time. But, you know, we watched the schools change and the areas change, and we can't fault the education that our kids got there. I substitute taught for 3 years before I started teaching again full time in 1989. And I was in Hillside, which of course is one of the have-not schools and very poor area, but we also had brand new areas being built on the other side of Hillside. And so we had students who had very, very little, or had a lot of Indigenous students. And then these kids who were coming from good, solid middle-class and upper-middle-class homes. It was quite a difference in our school. But we also had full-time Native liaisons in our school, and that made a tremendous difference in how our students interacted, how our First Nations students, you know, made friendships and things, that some of the parents who became very involved. That was a really good experience. And that was my first experience with being around people who were different than me. You know, I grew up middle, white, and that's all I knew. I wasn't used to immigrants. I wasn't used to a high First Nations population, and Grand Prairie changed. And our school was the Hillside School, was the school that took in it was for the English as a second language school. So it meant that we had anyone coming into our school who didn't speak English.
Yeah.
So I would get in my kindergarten class, I got children coming into my class from Afghanistan, Jordan, Serbia, Kosovo, that kind of thing. Right. It kind of opened my eyes a little bit to what the rest of the world was like before we went on missions, because I had certainly never had any experience out of, you know, middle-class, conservative, white. That's all we were used to. When we left Grand Prairie, it was changing quickly. But we left it with very fond emotions of where we'd been. It was 33 years before we left. And down here in Edmonton, our new temple president, we were their home teachers when they moved to Grand Prairie, and that was the Petersons. And now... Yep. There are ministering teachers, so it's changed, but it took a long time for that to change. So, you know, we still, Kim just went up to the Woolley funeral with Todd and saw so many of the people that we had come to know and love up there that are still there. So that was a good experience for him to go up there. So I think that, you know, as far as our family goes, our kids did not suffer to be raised up there, not one bit. And, it was a good experience all around, I think, for all of us.
We had a little riffraff down the road from us, but other than that, it was pretty darn good.
They weren't raising pigs.
No. I don't know how much longer you want to chit-chat. If you got any questions, we can answer your questions. But
yeah, did you have a question, Preston?
I think 33 years is a pretty good stink to live in Grand Prairie. It's definitely longer than I lived there for, longer than my parents lived there for.
Yeah. A couple other questions maybe slightly less related to the peace country, but do you mind telling us a little bit about how you two met and started a life together?
Well, let me see. Kim's a few years older than me. So before he went on his mission, I knew who he was because he dated one of my girlfriends and left on his mission. By the time he came back, I was in university. Then he decided he'd date my roommate. And that only happened, I think, twice, maybe only once. And then I waited a whole year before he noticed I existed. I was in my last year of university by then. So we were going to the institute at the university. And at that time, it consisted of basically one big mass of singles ward and some marrieds that were still going to school. So we started dating in the summertime. And I had a teaching position in Calgary. So he was going to school. He was in arts, finishing his arts. And I was doing my first year of teaching in Calgary. And I commuted back to Edmonton every weekend but three in that entire teaching year. And he came down to see me on those three weekends that I didn't come up. We were engaged, in October. And so it was a long, long year, and we were married right after I finished teaching school. So you could say we met at the Institute in Edmonton, where many marriages start.
Yeah.
And then went north for work. So that's kind of, you know, and as far as backgrounds of our families go, he's from a small town and I'm from the big city. So there were some adjustments for me to make.
Yeah.
But, you know, loved his parents. And it was fun to go down to Glenwood and see family down there. And he had to adjust to the big city. So we haven't suffered. Next week we'll have been married 54 years. So,
wow, congratulations.
Yeah, so I think we're doing all right. We at least we feel like we're doing fine. You know, we look at our friends who've lost spouses. So I think we're doing quite well.
Yeah. Our health is really good compared to so many our age now. Doing a ministering visit last week, and I thought, good grief. My companion is about 71, and it takes him about 10, 12 minutes to get out of the car and get up the step to the door to go in to visit. He's so crippled up. He's got every ailment known to man. And we get in the house there, this one family, and the man is also crippled all up, and he can hardly walk, and his hips are bad, and his knees are bad, and they got these pressure stockings they put on their legs. And and I'm sitting there listening to those two guys talk, and I thought, whoa, count your blessings, you know? When you're your age, your present age, you don't think too much about health, but seems like that's all we ever talk about anymore, you know. We go down to Desert Hot Springs every winter, and nearly every couple that's there that we know that are members of the church and associate with, they've got, well, at least one of them has got a serious health problem, ailings. And so we're just counting our blessings here, because as long as our health holds on us, happy campers.
You know, when we went to church our first Sunday here in Edmonton, the Rabbit Hill Ward, there was Preston and Cody Green, who I had taught when he was three, 4 years old, and the Carroll Boys at that time. And I thought, I know these people. And our bishop was the son of a couple that we had known from university. And so it's a small world, even when you come to the big city. And it's been interesting how many exports have come from Grand Prairie. And you've done well for themselves. Look at you.
Yeah, I think Preston's doing pretty well.
Thank you. Well, I'm not, I don't have a PhD or working towards one. So I think Garrett's doing pretty well.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm almost done. You don't have to go into a lot of detail as we're coming to wrapping up, but do you mind telling us about the missions that you served after you retired?
Okay.
I'll tell you about China and she can tell you about Africa.
Okay.
I had such a great experience as a missionary in Hong Kong, you know. And
yes.
To this day, when I hear missionaries come home and they're a little disenchanted with their missions or a little unhappy with this or that, I just cannot relate with it because my mission was such a spectacular experience for me. It changed my life. And I wanted my wife to have that experience. So we worked towards serving a couple mission and planned on it and set our goals to do it. But I thought, we're going to let the Lord decide where we're going to go. We're not.
Yeah.
We knew enough that all you had to do was phone a mission president and you could recruit yourself, you know. But I didn't want to do that. And so we just left it up to the brethren and the Lord. But I told her, I said, if I could choose where to go, I would like to go to Southeast Asia. I finished my mission in Singapore. And I really love Southeast Asia. And I said, that's probably not going to happen. Be prepared to be disappointed. So when the letter came, it said we're going to Beijing. And I thought, holy cow, I didn't even know there were missionaries in China, mainland. And so it was really a thrilling thing to be sent there for two years. And we taught. Our sponsor was the All China Women's Federation. And they had a university, and we taught English, you know, for the first 3 days of the week, 3.5 days of the week. Then we would do humanitarian the rest of the time. Teaching English to the Chinese is just one of the greatest experiences you can have. These students were just marvelous. And we loved that. And we loved the wheelchair projects. We would go all around China. And we would get a batch of wheelchairs and we'd go to a province and the Women's Federation would line us all up and we'd go there and have a wheelchair ceremony. And then the Women's Federation, these people treated us like we were rock stars. You know, I think they honestly thought, no matter what we told them, they thought we had donated the wheelchairs ourselves. You know, these people, they just couldn't buy into the fact that because we're not supposed to promote our church at all in China.
Yeah.
And we didn't. But we just had a marvelous time. And we, after, you know, the wheelchair ceremonies and everything we did, then the Women's Federation would take us like touring around that part of the province in China. And we ended up going to about 21 of the provinces of China, which is the majority.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And, you know, sometimes I used to joke that we were on a restaurant mission because all the great restaurants, you know, Beijing is such a cosmopolitan city. You know, you can get all these restaurants from every kind of part of the world you can dream of. And so we just had a marvelous experience teaching and meeting with the expat there. And we had an expat ranch, the church, about 150, 200 people, foreign passport holders.
In Beijing?
In Beijing.
Yeah.
And then so we could tour around and see different parts of the country. And it was just an unbelievable experience. And it all happened because we didn't lobby or try and create our own mission. We just let the Lord do it for us. And I think he did a pretty good job. We just really loved it there. And we built relationships with a lot of these students. Some of them are still in contact with us. So it was a marvelous experience.
Very fascinating. What about your African mission?
Okay. I'll just say one thing. When Kim said that we had planned, the decision was to be on a mission when he was 60. And that happened. That was our goal, for Kim to be 60. And so he was retired before he was 60. And we were on our first mission. He was still 60. So that was our goal. We came home. We had moved to Barrhead from Grand Prairie. And I think I was the reason. Well, I know I was. our kids had married. We had sent our kids to university to Alberta, with the exception of one. And he had apprenticed as a carpenter and ended up marrying a young woman he had met who was at the college and in Grand Prairie from a farm outside of Fort St. John. And so that's where they ended up, moving to Fort St. John. But the rest of our kids, five of our kids, were down here in Edmonton. So I said, it's time to be around the grandkids. We're too far away. So that's why we moved to Barrhead. Barrhead wasn't in the city yet. And we bought an acreage of 66 acres, a kilometer from Thunder Lake, and built a home there. So we were close to Edmonton and our kids, and it was a place to play. So we'd kind of replaced what we had in Grand Prairie. And we still have four of our kids close here, and our oldest daughter is now on Vancouver Island. So four out of six isn't too bad. We see most of our grandchildren here. So that was a good experience, the move. And so we were actually in Barrhead for 17 years. We came home from China in 2007, middle of 2000. Well, it was August of 2007. We had stayed to finish an extra month. We stayed so we could finish some wheelchair projects before we came home.
Yeah.
And our next mission was Uganda. So basically, we were home about 2.5 years. Fully intending to put in our papers again and go on another mission. And again, we did the same thing. We made no request. And it was interesting how just in a few short years, they were starting to say, the mission department, you can request missions. Of course, they're trying to get a couple of missionaries so much into the mission field that they were starting to be a little more adaptable for couples to go. We didn't put it again, and we went, and we knew we had a call coming in. We were just waiting for it to come, and we went to the mailbox down the road, and there was our mission call, and Kim let me open it. And so I opened it and read where it was, and that was the last thing he said. So when we phoned our kids that night to tell them where our call was to, he still wasn't talking. And he didn't talk that night. And it finally came out that he had at one point said, someone asked him where he didn't ever want to go on a mission. And guess where it was? Africa. And we were sent to Africa. So we were sent to the Uganda Kampala mission. And that mission at that time included Ethiopia, Rwanda, and Uganda.
Oh, wow.
We went just right after Christmas, and at the start of 2010, we're picked up at the airport and our clothes didn't arrive with us. They were stuck in Great Britain somewhere, probably London, and the flights came in only every 2 days.
Too much detail.
Yeah. So anyway, we were at the mission home washing our clothes, and we got to attend on that Sunday the formation of the first stake in Uganda. So we were there when it stopped being a district and they got their first stake. And that was major because it had been about just not even 20 years since the first missionary, first baptism had occurred in Uganda. So that was major. And we were in a small, not a small town. It used to be the resort town of Uganda. It was called Jinja. And they hadn't had a couple missionary there for almost a year when we got there and needed it badly. So we were member missionary leadership support. We were there to help them organize themselves and show them how to do things. I was over the Perpetual Education Fund. Kim was the counselor in the district presidency. A counselor kind of to the mission president, but we were working with the people there. And when we moved there, there were basically, it was a branch in Jinja where we lived and one in Mpumide and one in Bugimbi. There were three branches and that was all. And in that 18 months we were there,
And
Wiluqaba was four. So there were four. And by the time we left, it had more than doubled. It had almost tripled. And we got to go up to Mbali, which is right on the border with Kenya. It's in the mountains, Mount Elgon. And we went up with a mission president and a pair of missionaries. And they knew they wanted to form a branch, but how to locate members of the church who they knew they were there, but there's no such thing as an address in Uganda. And so the mission president said to the missionaries, walk up and down Main Street. Just walk up and down Main Street. And as they did that, people would stop them and they'd say, the missionaries are here. The missionaries have come. And they would tell them about the meeting the next day. So that next day, there were 13 at the formation of the Mbali branch. And they brought in a couple, not even 6 months later. And within a year, they had a huge branch there. And by the time we went home, it had spread to other areas, just from missionaries walking up and down the street, because these members would be baptized, say, in the Jinja area or in Kampala area, and then they'd go to their villages, waiting for the church to find them. So we want to know how missions are different here and there. We had people stopping us on the street saying, oh, you believe in Jesus Christ? I believe in Jesus Christ. Our missionaries didn't have problems bringing people to the church and getting them baptized. The biggest problem was the retention of members. But we did a lot of after baptism lessons with the members. A lot of them didn't have scriptures, so they hadn't read the Book of Mormon. They loved to sing. It was really fun doing choirs with them because they liked to have additions to the hymns. So they like to add little warbles and things, and it makes hymn singing much more interesting with them. I taught keyboard lessons so they could start to have accompaniment in their meetings, and some of them did quite well. So we were pleased about that. I made bread, and because the bread there is like sawdust, and muffins almost daily.
And flour was bad.
Yeah, the flour didn't have a good gluten content in it, so you couldn't like you do. So I learned how to make bread that was nice and soft and tasted like home, and muffins. I had a little tiny stove, and when anybody came to our home, to our compound, they got muffins. So Kim used to take muffins to the district presidency meeting, and one day he forgot, and they sent him home. And you know, they're not used to sweet, so everybody has beautiful teeth, and you would see them sucking on sugar cane. But sugar cane, you have to do a lot of sucking on the cane to even get the sweet taste. So they weren't used to sugar in their diet at all. Their diets were so meager, very, very little. A lot of them, if they ate at night, it was because that might have been their only meal during the day, and it was so that the children would go to bed with full tummies. There was 80% unemployment when we were there. A lot of the women were the breadwinners. And it was really hard to be around people who were so faithful and so good and had so little, many of them living in mud homes. So, you know, if we were to build a mud home here for one of our members, we know how to do it and could show them, you know, how to make a cheap home.
We could teach Preston how to do it too.
Yeah. You could establish a business.
He could go around the world building mud house.
Yeah. But you know, as poor as they were, the women always came to church looking very beautiful. And that was important to them. One day my husband had gone to a meeting and he came back and he didn't have his shirt on. And he'd been in a meeting and there was a man there. And his shirt was torn. And so
worn out.
And so Kim took his shirt off his back, came back and got another one. And when we left, I left my clothes and he left a bunch of clothes because we knew that they needed it more than we did. And, you know, in China, they didn't have the gospel. And we saw poverty with our wheelchair projects, because that's where we were going. We're very, very poor areas in China, and they do exist. And we had people come in rags to get wheelchairs. And so I thought I'd seen poverty, but I didn't even know what poverty was until we got there. And to see these people with absolutely nothing coming to church with smiles on their faces and happy, I have a hard time when I'm around someone who's complaining about something they don't have. It's really difficult because we are so blessed. And I'm still at the point we're now at, you know, coming up well over 13 years since we got home. And I still remind myself, and I don't have to remind myself very much, is how blessed we are. I don't think, unless someone has traveled and seen the conditions that some of these people who are our brothers and sisters live in, can walk away and not appreciate what they have.
When I was in Beijing, China, I came home and I said, I'll never complain again. But 6 months later, guess what? I'm back complaining about this or that again. But then when we came back from Africa, I said to myself, I really am never going to complain again. And we got it so rough here in Canada. You know, I just go out the door and I look down the street and I'll see about 3 vehicles for every house. And, you know, we have so much prosperity, and yet we're grumbling and complaining and going on about how tough it is. You know, it's hard to do after you've been to Africa.
Well, or you haven't had money. And I said to Preston, and you probably don't even remember this, this would be Grandpa and Grandma Brown, and we were up there at a meeting, and they invited us to their home for dinner after church. And they had built their home, and I think it's the one they probably died in, and the upstairs was not finished at all, and the downstairs was concrete walls, and there were some wood partitions, and the only thing that had gyprock on it, I think, were 2 bedrooms, and the gyprock wasn't finished. So the house was a work in progress. And I think it was a work in progress for quite some time. And your Grandma Brown was just, she was a happy lady at living in those circumstances. And those circumstances she lived in would be considered a palace where we were in Africa. So, you know, I think our attitude has a lot on how we progress, what we can do where we live, how we can love others who are different, how we need to be charitable. And the church is very generous when we're generous. And I think that's important. So, you know, the one mission, we kept our mouths shut and tried to be a light, because that's all we could do. Couldn't answer questions, couldn't reference the church, nothing like that. We could just, what would Jesus do? And the next one, we knew what Jesus would do, and we weren't allowed to give them any money. And that's really, really hard when you see such tremendous need. And the first thing your president has said to you is, you may not give these people money. Because then that would be expected. And we didn't want that. So we tried to make them so they were faithful and humble and worthy of every blessing we all get. And we had the great pleasure of teaching temple prep and taking a group down to the South African, to Johannesburg temple. And the church pays for that. So most of those members there have one opportunity in their lifetime to go to the temple. And that's to be sealed as families. And they treasure that. And they talk about that. And so every time they announce a temple in Africa, I usually have something to say, and was just absolutely thrilled when they announced one for Kenya, because that's a bus ride away from Uganda. That's a tremendous blessing for people who have nothing. Really tremendous. So I think that's about all I need to say.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, it really touches me. I don't really have words to follow what you said, except thank you. So,
well,
thank you for sharing. I think we'll probably wrap up. It's been an absolute pleasure to catch up with you and to talk with you. Yes, you've blessed and touched so many lives. It's a privilege to know you, and it's quite a privilege for Preston to hang out with you guys. So
that's kind of nice to go in and see every Sunday. Just sits a couple of rows back behind us. Make sure we're behaving.
We liked him better when he had the long hair, but we still like it even with the short.
My hair was very nice. Who needs nice hair for a radio podcast, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It was nice to share memories.
Yes, it was a privilege to hear your generous stories.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we're very grateful to those who listen to our podcast. And you can check out more episodes of our podcast at our website at peacecountrylife.ca or email us at lifenorthofthe54th@gmail.com. Kim and Rand, we're very grateful for the time you shared with us here. It's truly been an absolute pleasure. And
our pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
We really hope that good health and energy keeps going through you so that you can continue to touch so many lives. So thank you.
You bet.
Yeah, we'll see you around. Hopefully not before too long.
Yes.
Well, I don't think we're moving. Not unless it's winter.
Yep. Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.